This is Vincent Price. Edgar Bolton is as average as the average man can be. At 55, which certainly is not old by today's standards, Edgar lives in a modest, heavily mortgaged home in the suburbs. He has just made the sixth payment on a new car. Only 30 more and the car will be his. Edgar has an average wife named Helen. Edgar and Helen have two daughters. One is married, the other is still attending college. For the past 38 years, Edgar has been employed by the Hopkins Quality Shoe Company. He started out as an errand boy and then worked his way up to head bookkeeper and chief accountant. Up until the time that Peter Hopkins Sr. died, Edgar was looked upon as Hopkins' right-hand man. Because of his dedication and working knowledge of the business end of the firm, some people wondered why Edgar had never been made vice president. In any event, with all these things going for him, Edgar Bolton is the least likely person in the world to become embroiled in murder. But that's exactly what is going to happen to him. And that's only the beginning of our story.
Mutual Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. Five nights of exceptional entertainment every week, brought to you in Elliot Lewis's production of the Mutual Radio Theater. Our story, Accidentally on Purpose, by Martin Ryerson. Our stars, Vic Perrin and Kim Hamilton.
Edgar Bolton's involvement in murder started on a Monday morning at the breakfast table in the Bolton kitchen. As Helen picked up the coffee pot and filled Edgar's cup, she said,
"With food prices the way they are, Edgar, I simply can't manage any more on your salary."
"Please, Helen, don't start that again."
"I'm not only going to start it, Edgar. I'm going to keep at it until you ask young Mr. Hopkins for a raise."
"But it's hard to talk to Junior. He isn't like his father."
"No matter, Edgar. You've got to ask him for more money."
"Okay. But I know what he's going to say. He can't afford it."
"A raise, Edgar? I can't afford it."
"But I haven't had an increase in salary in more than 3 years, Mr. Hopkins, since long before your father died."
"I'm sorry, Edgar. As a matter of fact, I've been meaning to call you in here to my office and talk to you about the new computer I've ordered for the company."
"Computer? Well, this is the first I've heard about it."
"No one's been told about it yet, but it'll be here in a few days. It will handle all the bookkeeping chores, as well as much of the other office work, and will require only one person to operate it. Which means, of course, that we'll be eliminating several jobs in the office, including yours."
"Mine? You mean you're going to let me go? But what'll I do?"
"Well, it's hardly my concern, Edgar."
"But it is. I've given 38 years of my life to this firm. Blood, sweat..."
"Oh, please, Edgar, let's not get melodramatic."
"But I'm 55 years old. Where will I get another job? Besides, your father always promised there'd be a place for me here at Hopkins Shoes for as long as I live."
"My father was given to sentiment and rash promises."
"I have a wife and teenage daughter to support. I have obligations to meet." "That..."
"Yes, Frida?"
"Your wife is on the phone, Mr. Hopkins."
"I'll take it in a moment, Frida. Well, Edgar, it looks as if that ends our conversation. Of course, you'll receive suitable severance pay."
"No, no."
"If you don't mind, Edgar, my wife is on the phone. I'd like to talk to her privately."
"You just can't turn me out like this. I'm not a stranger. I knew you as a little boy. You used to call me Uncle Edgar."
"I'm not a little boy any longer, and you are just another employee who's outlived his usefulness to the firm. Now, I'm going to ask you again to please leave quietly. If not, I'll have you escorted out." Edgar.
"Good evening, Mr. Hopkins. I had every intention of talking to you further at the office today. And then I remembered Frida saying that your wife, your mother, and the children were away for the summer and that you'd be here alone. So I thought it might be best if I came here to your house and talked to you. I hope you don't mind."
"But I do mind. I resent very much your coming here to my home."
"Please Don't close the door on me, Mr. Hopkins. It's very important that I have a few words with you. May I come in?
You may not come in. I'm in my bathrobe, ready for bed.
But I'll only take a few minutes of your time, please.
Oh, very well. Come in. But remember, only for a few minutes. Now, we can talk in here in the study. Now, Edgar, what's so important that it can't wait until morning at the office?
I haven't been home since I left work. I just couldn't face my wife and tell her that I've been fired. I know she'll go all to pieces.
You're being melodramatic again, Edgar.
No, I just want to impress on you the desperate situation we'll be in if I'm out of a job.
Progress, Edgar. You can't expect the world to stand still because it might inconvenience one man.
But it isn't just one man. It's my entire family. They'll be completely destroyed. Please, Mr. Hopkins, I'm not asking for my old job back. I'm just asking you not to discharge me. Maybe I could learn to operate the computer.
That would take too long. Besides, we've already hired someone.
But, well, there must be some place in the firm I can fit in. In the plant, maybe. Maybe I could become a cutter or learn to operate one of the machines. Perforating, crimping, sewing, or stitching.
You may know the business end of the firm, Edgar, but obviously you know little about manufacturing, how shoes are actually made. Those jobs you mentioned take years to learn. By the time you were qualified to take your place on the assembly line, you'd have reached retirement age.
Please, Mr. Hopkins, in my whole life I've never begged. But I'm begging you now, sir. Not for myself, but for my wife and daughter.
Oh, stop it, Edgar. You're becoming rather tiresome.
I'm only trying to make you understand the seriousness of my situation and what will happen if I lose my job. I'll do anything you say. I'll sweep the floors. I'll act as night watchman. Anything at all. I'll even take a cut in salary.
I'm sorry, Edgar. What I told you this morning still stands. There's no longer any place for you in the firm. Not in the office, not in the plant, not anywhere. You're through.
You just don't want me around because I remind you of your father and makes you aware of how inferior you are to him.
Now, that's quite enough, Edgar. I want you to leave right now.
No, I won't leave until you promise not to fire me.
I dislike violence, Edgar. Especially with older men. But I can see there's no other way to deal with you.
No, stay away from me, Junior.
Don't call me Junior. And get up out of that chair and go quietly.
No.
Then I'll have to use force.
Take your hands off me, Junior. Stop it. You're choking me. Let me go.
Put down that paperweight, Edgar. I said, put it down. No, Edgar, don't. Don't hit me with that.
Junior, wake up. Open your eyes. I didn't mean to hit you so hard. I only wanted to make you let me go. You were choking me. I could hardly breathe. Blood. Your head's bleeding. No, please, Junior, wake up. Your pulse. Where's your pulse? It should be right here in your neck. Or in your wrist. But it's not. There's no pulse beat, and you're not breathing. Oh, God, no. It can't be. You can't be dead.
It took a long time for Edgar to appreciate the full impact of what had happened, to realize that Peter Hopkins Jr., son of the man who had been his longtime friend and employer, was really dead, and that he had killed him. True, it had not been premeditated. He never meant to kill Jr. He only wanted to stop Jr. from choking him.
My first impulse was to call the police and make a clean breast of the whole thing, but who would believe I hadn't come here to kill him, especially if they found out that Junior had fired me? I finally decided that the safest thing to do would be to cover my tracks and leave. Carefully, I wiped everything clean of fingerprints, especially the paperweight. I made sure no evidence was left behind, and then, to make it look like robbery, I pulled out the desk drawers, and I emptied their contents. turned over some of the furniture. When that was done, I hurried into the corridor. I looked up the stairs that led to the bedrooms. Everything up there was in total darkness. I listened. There was not a sound. So I left by the front door and hurried to my car parked in the driveway. I drove around for a while until my nerves were steady enough to go home and face my wife. It wasn't until I got there and found the note Helen had left for me that I remembered this was the night she played bingo at the church. It was past 11 when Helen finally got home. That you, Helen?
Yes, Edgar. You been home long?
Usual time.
Have you eaten anything yet?
Had a sandwich when I first got home. That was a little after 6.
Oh, I must have just missed you. I left the house at 5:45. You must be starved. I'll see what's in the refrigerator.
No, I'm not hungry.
Are you feeling all right, Edgar?
Of course. Why?
Well, you're so pale and your hands are shaking. You're coming down with a cold. I'll get you an aspirin.
No. I'll be all right. Now that you're home, I'll get to bed.
I'll get some more milk for you. Oh, by the way, Edgar, did you ask Mr. Hopkins about that raise?
I didn't get a chance. I was pretty busy all day, but I'll make it a point to speak to him first thing in the morning.
And you be firm with him, Edgar. Don't let him talk you out of it. Edgar! Edgar, wake up.
What's the matter? What time is it?
6:30.
Why did you wake me so early?
Young Peter Hopkins has been killed.
Killed? How?
I don't know. The report just came over the radio. The police think the motive might have been robbery. I think you'd better hurry and dress and get to the office.
Yeah, you're right, Helen. With nobody there to take charge, everything's probably in a mess. Good morning, Frida.
Hello, Edgar. I'm glad you got here. Isn't it terrible about Mr. Hopkins?
It sure is, but where is everybody? The office is deserted.
I sent everyone home.
You sent everyone home? Who gave you that authority?
Mrs. Hopkins. The senior Mrs. Hopkins. She called from the country as soon as she heard about her son. She wants the entire plant closed down until after Junior's funeral. Then, she says, she and Junior's wife will decide what to do about the company.
How did his mother take Peter's death?
A lot better than that soupy wife of his. No wonder he couldn't stand her.
I thought they were very happily married.
Only his secretary would know for sure.
Well, now, I hardly think this is the time for joking, Frida.
But I wasn't joking. I'm the one who intercepted their calls and made excuses when he didn't want to go home.
I think I'd prefer not to hear about it.
Okay. But I wonder what Mrs. Hopkins and her daughter-in-law will do about the company. Suppose she decides to close shop.
I'm afraid there isn't very much we can do about it one way or the other. The only thing I know is there's still work to do. Even if the plant is closed for a few days, I've got billings to get out, orders to be filled. If not, Mrs. Hopkins will find that her son left her a liability instead of an asset.
It was a lovely funeral. Don't you think so, Edgar?
Yes, Mrs. Hopkins, I do.
Now, you're probably wondering why I asked you to see me so soon after Junior's burial, and what plans Junior's wife and I have for the company.
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Well, Edgar, you and everyone else at the plant can put away your worries. My daughter-in-law and I have decided to keep the plant open and to continue making Hopkins quality shoes.
Everybody's certainly going to be relieved to know that, ma'am.
But that does not solve all our problems. We're going to need someone to run the company. At first, we considered Mr. Penny. While he may be a very competent plant manager, we found he's had no experience at all in business administration. On the other hand, we know about your business experience. And that, coupled with your loyalty and length of service, convinced us that you're the man we want.
You mean head the entire company?
Yes, Edgar. To be in complete charge, with no one to answer to except my daughter-in-law and me.
Yes, Edgar?
Frida, would you come in for a moment, please?
Certainly.
Close the door, Frida, and sit down.
Yes, Edgar.
Frieda, I've given you 3 weeks to adjust to the fact that I'm no longer an office flunky, that I am now the boss, and that you are my secretary.
I wasn't aware that I'd overlooked that fact.
Oh, but you have. You've continually made decisions without first consulting me. Also, I found a number of letters that you've written that were not dictated or authorized by me.
Junior never objected to me handling little details like that on my own.
I am not Junior. And in the future, you will not measure me by his standards. Something else I don't understand is your salary. It's almost $100 over what the position pays.
I guess Junior must have liked what I was doing, Edgar.
That's another thing. The way you call me Edgar sounds as if you're addressing one of the office help instead of your superior. In the future, you will call me Mr. Bolton.
Yes, sir. I'll remember that, Mr. Bolton. And when I get to my desk, I'll call the haberdasher.
Haberdasher? What for?
To order a size larger hat for you.
Just one moment, Frieda. I told you before, I do not appreciate your sense of humor.
I'll remember that too, Mr. Bolton.
In view of your service with the company, I dislike having to fire you, Frieda. I know how inconvenient it would be for you.
I'm sure you do, Mr. Bolton. I'm sure you know better than anyone what it means to be fired.
What exactly do you mean by that?
Simply that you'd naturally know what it would be like to be discharged after that little talk you had with Junior here in his office the day he was killed.
Close the door, Frieda. Come back here and sit down. What do you know about my talk with Junior?
Maybe first you'd better make sure that the key on the intercom is closed, Mr. Bolton.
It's closed.
It wasn't closed that last day you spoke to Junior.
You mean you heard what he said?
About firing you? Mm-hmm. I heard what he said and what you said. I know it isn't nice to eavesdrop. But sometimes a girl needs a little insurance for her future.
Nobody would believe he fired me. It would only be your word against mine.
Correction, Mr. Bolton. It would be your word against mine and his.
What do you mean?
Like poor Richard of Watergate fame, Junior liked to have his conversations, telephone and otherwise, on tape.
And you have the tape?
Yes.
Where?
In a safe place. And you know that sense of humor of mine? The one you don't approve of? It almost got the best of me that day the police came here looking for motives. I just about cracked up when, with a straight face, you said you didn't have a motive. And all the while, you had the best reason of anyone for killing Junior.
But I didn't kill him.
Didn't you, Edgar? Didn't you go to the Hopkins place that night and plead with Junior not to fire you? Beg? Wasn't that the word you used? Did you offer to do anything, even sweep floors, if only he'd keep you on the payroll?
How do you know all those things? You weren't there.
Wasn't I, Edgar? Did you bother to go up the stairs? You might have been quite surprised if you had gone up and looked in the master bedroom.
You were there?
Uh-huh. Waiting for Junior.
In the same house that he shared with his wife?
Don't look so shocked, Edgar.
Are you trying to tell me that you and Junior...
Didn't you think I was his type? Junior thought it might be better if I deglamorized myself for the office. I've been thinking that the same idea might appeal to you.
Me? Well, you can't possibly mean that you and I did...
Are going to share a very cozy relationship? Of course we are, Edgar, darling. You see, I've discovered that a girl like me, all alone in the world, can never carry too much insurance.
Sow the furrows with sin and reap the devil's harvest. Yes, it is written that no man or woman can break the commandments and hope to escape retribution. Edgar Bolton had killed a man. Accidentally or not. He had compounded his act of murder by trying to cover his tracks and refusing to accept his part in the killing. Here is Edgar now, standing at the door to Frieda Hale's apartment. At her invitation, he is visiting her for the first time.
Well, good evening, Edgar.
Frieda? What? Is it really you?
Who else? Come in.
Well, I never saw you look like this before. Your hair down, falling over your shoulders. You're not wearing your glasses.
But I am wearing a very attractive gown. You don't approve, Edgar?
But I do. It's just that... I can't believe it. You're actually beautiful.
Well, thank you, Edgar. I guess that proves the wisdom of the old saying about never judging the contents of a package by its wrappings. Just as you proved that you weren't the meek little man you appeared to be for so long. Let's go into the living room where we can sit down and talk. Now, you sit right there on the divan, Edgar, and I'll mix a couple of drinks.
Thanks, but I don't really drink.
But you're a big executive now, darling. Head of a major shoe company. Drinking is one of the requisites of a job like that. How about a scotch and soda?
Oh, all right, but very little scotch. You asked me to come here, Frida, because you said you wanted to talk.
That's right.
What did you want to talk about?
Well, for one thing, I received a notice in this morning's mail. My rent is being raised $75 a month.
Mm, that's a pretty stiff hike.
I'm so glad you agree. Your drink, Edgar.
Thank you.
First, a toast. Here's to a lot of nice things happening for you and me.
Oh, I'll drink to that.
Drink isn't too strong, is it, Edgar?
No, just right.
Good. Now back to the rent problem. I can't possibly afford to pay $75 a month more. Unless, of course, my boss was to give me a raise.
Oh, impossible, Frida. I told you the other day, your salary already is way out of proportion to everyone else's. The payroll wouldn't stand it.
It would if you let someone go. In the shop, for example, with that new stitching machine that's being installed, we won't need all the help we have now. You could very easily eliminate one or two of those jobs, if you really wanted to. For one, you could let Henny Ficken go.
But Henny Ficken's been with the firm for almost 20 years. I couldn't do a thing like that, Frida.
Move over, darling. Let me sit next to you on the divan. Then we won't have to shout. Now, about that raise...
I can't okay it, Frida.
But it's for your benefit as much as mine.
Well, how do you figure that out?
You're going to be spending almost as much time here as I will. Same as Junior used to do.
Oh, no, 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 no. You've got the wrong man. I'm not getting involved in anything like that.
Oh, you disappoint me, Edgar. From the way you've been staring at me, I thought you'd want to.
It's just that I'm not used to being alone like this with a woman wearing a tight-fitting dress with a décolletage like that.
Doesn't your wife ever wear sexy-looking gowns or negligees?
Helen, good heavens, no.
What a pity. No wonder you're never in a hurry to get home. I can see where I'm going to have to take you in hand, darling, and give you an education.
Oh, no, no. I happen to love my wife.
Edgar, my sweet, no man who loves his wife stays half the night at the office when he doesn't have to.
But in my case...
Suppose you stop trying to fool your secretary and give me your empty glass. You need a refill.
But I feel kind of woozy. I haven't had more than one drink since I don't know when.
It does a person good to let go once in a while. Helps get rid of all your inhibitions. For instance, I'll bet right now you'd even have courage enough to put your arms around me. You'd like to put your arms around me, wouldn't you, darling?
Yes, I would, but
go right ahead. I won't stop you. There. Mm-hmm. Isn't that better? When you don't suppress your desires?
I never had any idea a woman as young as you could be even interested in a man my age.
Oh, age makes no difference, Edgar. Especially not when a man is as important as you've become. When he can guarantee a woman's security.
Security?
Now that we've discovered each other, darling, you certainly don't think I'm going to let you go.
But well, what about Helen?
We can decide what to do with her later.
Do with her? I don't know what you mean.
Oh, it isn't important right now. We have far more interesting things to do.
For instance?
Let me get you another drink. Then we'll talk about them.
No, no, no more to drink. If I have any more, I'll have to spend the rest of the night here.
That, my dear one, might prove a lot more interesting than you think.
Is something troubling you, Edgar?
Troubling me? What makes you ask that?
Why, you seem so preoccupied. You've hardly touched your dinner.
Oh, I guess I'm just not hungry.
That's more than that, Edgar. You haven't been yourself for a long time.
Imagination.
No, it isn't just imagination. It's that job you have. It's too much for you. Ever since young Mr. Hopkins was killed and Mrs. Hopkins put you in charge, you've been like a stranger.
Please, Helen, don't nag. I have problems enough at the office without being bugged when I get home.
I knew it. It's that job. And that woman you have as your secretary isn't helping any.
Frieda? What's wrong with her?
Everything. When young Mr. Hopkins was alive, she was always so sweet and courteous. But now, when I call and try to get through to you, you'd think I was an interloper or trying to collect money. Half the time, she won't even let me talk to you. She simply says you're busy and hangs up. And when she calls to tell me you'll be working late or that you have to make an unexpected trip out of town, why, she sounds as if she actually enjoys letting me know you won't be home.
Oh, that's a lot of nonsense, Helen. You keep talking like that, and I'll start to wonder if you aren't the one who's changed. Why, in the 32 years we've been married...
You see, you don't even remember how long we've been married. It happens to be 33 years.
All right. In the 33 years we've been married, I've never known you to be jealous before.
I'm not jealous.
Okay, suspicious.
Not suspicious either. I just don't like that woman. I don't trust her. I think you should get rid of her as quickly as possible. Fire her.
Fire Frieda?
Yes. I think she's an evil influence. And I also think she knows a great deal more about Junior's death than she's letting on.
Vincent Price again, and here's the fourth act of Accidentally on Purpose.
That woman! How dare she say that I'm an evil influence, or dare to accuse me of having anything to do with Junior's death?
Now, you can't entirely blame Helen, Frieda.
Why can't I?
Well, you told me yourself you've had several brushes with her on the telephone.
That doesn't give her the right to say I'm an evil influence. Oh. I wonder what she'd say if she knew her darling husband killed Junior.
Stop saying that. You make it sound as if it were intentional. You know I never meant to kill him. Now, come here. Come on. Sit down beside me on the divan.
No, Edgar. I'm not in the mood. And I just can't stand that woman.
Well, that sort of makes things even. She says she can't stand you either.
And I suppose that gives you the feeling of a superior male, having two women fighting over you.
Oh, not really. It makes me a little afraid. In fact, just the thought of it makes me want a drink. Can I get you one, too?
No. I'll go to the bar with you and get my own.
You know, it's funny.
What is?
6 months ago, when I first came here to your apartment, I wasn't a drinking man. One scotch and soda was my capacity. Now I can have three or four and think nothing of it.
The influence of an evil woman?
Oh, forget that, Frieda. I only told you those things so you'd know how Helen feels, so you'd know better how to handle her.
There's only one way to handle her. Get rid of her.
Get rid of her? How?
Divorce her.
Oh, divorce Helen? You must be joking. She'd never consent to a divorce. Her religion wouldn't permit it, and she'd never go against that. She's too devout. I've told you that.
She's also dangerous, and she's standing in our way.
Not really dangerous, Frieda. She'd never do anything drastic. And as far as standing in our way, she hasn't stopped me from doing what I want to do so far.
Did it ever occur to you that I might not be completely satisfied with our little arrangement?
But I've done everything you asked. Given you everything I can, including a couple of very sizable raises. What more could you possibly want?
I want to be Mrs. Edgar Bolton. That's what. I want to be the wife of the head of the Hopkins Quality Shoe Company. I want a big house, and I want to sleep in that big bed you say you share with her. I want it to be our bed. I want you to divorce her.
I can't do that, Frieda. I just told you, Helen would never give me a divorce.
Then it's up to you to find a way to make her do it.
How can I possibly do that? Helen has never so much as looked twice at another man before or since we've been married.
I'm sorry, Edgar, darling, but you've got to find a way to get rid of her. Before I get desperate enough or frustrated enough to unseal that tape and play it for the district attorney.
Oh, now, you wouldn't. You couldn't do such a thing to me, Frieda.
There's one way to make sure, darling. get rid of Helen and marry me. A wife can't testify against her husband.
But you'd still have the tape.
Only as Mrs. Edgar Bolton, it would hurt me as much as you. So on our wedding night, darling, I'll give you the tape with all my love.
Frida left me with little choice. I had to find a way to get rid of Helen so I could marry Frida. It was the only way I could get hold of that incriminating tape and shut the door permanently on my part in the death of Peter Hopkins, Jr. So at the first opportunity, I talked to Helen. Using a couple of our friends as examples, I broached the subject of divorce. It didn't take long for me to see that it was an impossible subject to even discuss with her. It was an absolute taboo as far as she was concerned. Next, I suggested that she take a prolonged trip. I hoped that if she got away and stayed away long enough, it might convince her that life could be a lot better for her without me around. Of course, I hopefully fantasized that she might find someone else to take my place. I offered to make all arrangements for her to travel to Europe, to the Orient, South America, go any place she wanted and stay as long as she cared to. But her answer was no. And all the while, Frida kept up the pressure on me, and she had very potent weapons. Aside from the tape with my voice and Junior's voice on it, Frida, it must be remembered, was years younger. Far prettier, and definitely not the frigid woman Helen had become. I never really admitted it, but I was in love with Frida. As she had promised that first night in her apartment, she had educated me to a new kind of life, a new kind of love, far more exciting and satisfying than I had ever known. One thing was certain. I could very easily live without Helen, but now that I had come to really know Frida, I would not care to exist without her. I weighed my problem from every angle. I exhausted every possible means of dissolving my marriage to Helen so I'd be free to make Frida my wife. Perhaps if I had not killed Junior, murder might never have entered my mind. But the knowledge that I had killed once made the thought of killing again not nearly so improbable. But this time I would make certain that no one knew. I would make sure there were no tapes, no open intercom keys, no evidence of any kind. To our friends, our relatives, and even to our two daughters, Helen and I were perfectly compatible. Everyone considered ours the ideal marriage, and for 33 years it had been. No one would ever begin to guess that I might have any reason to kill her. The only person who would know I even had a motive was Frida. And I had no intention of letting her know what I planned to do. If later on she learned the truth about what I'd done, it would be too late. By then, Frida would be my wife. It took several weeks for me to formulate my plan and work up courage enough to carry it out. And don't ever let anyone tell you it doesn't take courage to kill the woman with whom you've lived for 33 years. The night I chose to carry out my plan, I worked late at the office. I let the night watchman know I was there, but kept the door locked. At 11 p.m., I left the office and slipped out through the back door, making sure the watchman did not see me leave. I tried not to think about what I was going to do, but the thought was there every moment. I didn't go to Frida's apartment, not that night. I didn't want to see Frida again until after Helen was buried. I felt it would be better that way. My plan, of course, was to return to the office after the deed was done, slip back inside without being seen, and then let the watchman know I was there. Make him think I'd been there all the while. Perfect alibi. My main concern was that at the last moment I might lose my nerve. The only way I could be sure of avoiding that was to keep remembering that tape Frida had. To keep telling myself that I would never be safe until I could get hold of the tape and destroy it. It was well past 11 o'clock and pouring rain when I got to the two-story stucco house that Helen and I had lived in together for most of our married life. Helen always retired early, so I knew she'd be in bed and fast asleep. I let myself in through the side door. When I got inside, I didn't turn on the lights, but kept the house in total darkness. I took off my shoes and left them just inside the side door where I could grab them on my way out. Then I went to the staircase. I paused a moment to steady my jumpy nerves. Then I climbed the stairs slowly. When I got to the top, I could see the door to our bedroom was open. I dared not hesitate or even stop to think I might lose my nerve. I went directly into the bedroom and halted beside the bed. I could see Helen's sleeping figure lying there in the darkness. I picked up a pillow, got a good grip on each end of it. Then I brought it down over her face and held it there. Figure on the bed was no longer breathing. I couldn't bear to look at the job I'd done. I turned and staggered out of the room. I had just started down the stairs, my heart pounding, my body drenched with perspiration, when all at once the landing and the hallway below became a blaze of light.
Edgar!
Helen! Where in God's name did you come from?
The rain changed my plans.
Plans? What are you talking about?
Didn't that woman tell you?
Woman? What woman?
Frida, didn't she tell you about me going away?
Going where?
I decided to take your advice and take a short vacation. I made arrangements to fly to Chicago and spend a couple of weeks with Lois and her family, and then go on to Wisconsin and visit Sally at college.
And what happened?
I told you, because of the storm, all flights were canceled, so I decided to come home and wait until tomorrow to leave.
Then how could you be in bed?
Me in bed? Whatever you talking about, Edgar. How could I be in bed? I just came from the airport.
Well, then who?
Edgar, where are you going? Edgar, what's gotten into you? What's in the bedroom?
No, don't switch on the light.
Well, of course I'm going to switch on the light. I can't see a thing in this darkness. Oh, my God. On the bed.
It's her.
Frida.
She couldn't have known about the storm. And she thought you were gone. She must have come here before the rain started to surprise me when I came home. She said she wanted to take your place in our big bed. And that's exactly what she did.
And you thought it was me lying there. You thought it was me you killed. Oh, Edgar!
Radio Theater is brought to you 5 nights a week at this time. Tonight's original radio play, Accidentally on Purpose, was written by Martin Ryerson and produced and directed by Fletcher Markle. Your host was Vincent Price. Our stars were Vic Perrin and Kim Hamilton. Featured in the cast were Gene Howell and Byron Kane. John Harlan speaking. The Elliott Lewis production of Mutual Radio Theater is a presentation of CBI. Mutual Radio Theater has been brought to you in part by Sears, a name that means quality and value, a name that you can count on for service and dependability. Sears, where America shops for value.
This is Cicely Tyson. At the same time tomorrow, we'll bring you My Kind of Story, a new play about the problems of people in love.